Hi everybody, hope you're well. My name is Jim Carroll. Welcome you to the weekly podcast from the Banter team. Does Nevin Maguire require an introduction at this stage of the game? We caught up with the nicest man in the Irish restaurant and food business during Banter's residency at Bloom in the Phoenix Park in Dublin to talk to him about food, kitchens, restaurants, the TV game, cooking for babies and kids, and keeping high standards in Black Line.
Hi everybody, welcome back to Banter at Bloom. Thank you very much for coming along. My name is Jim Carroll. Would you please give a warm welcome to Mr. Nevin
Hello.
Maguire.
How are you? Jim, thank you very much and good afternoon everyone. Isn't it lovely to see the sun out? It's nice to be a bit warmer. God, over there you think in the kitchen you're warm and nearly frozen. But you're all very, very welcome. So thank you, Jim.
No problem at all, Nevin. I want to start with kind of a nodball question. Say, you know, I mean, your little ones now are what, three or four?
Three,
okay. So 10 years from now, they'd come to you and go, Daddy, we want to work in the kitchen. We want to work in McNean's. We're the next generation. What do you say to them?
I say, absolutely. Free labour is great in Cavan. And no, all joking apart. No. Because I'm from a family of nine and all my family worked in the restaurant, some front of house, some washing dishes, some doing a bit of cooking like my sisters. And hard work is good. It's good to install that in young people from a young age, that you have to work for pocket money and that. I think that's very important. When you run a family business, it's a different, you live and breathe it. So it's 24/7. We lived in the business. We don't do that anymore, obviously. But and it was 24/7. So yeah, I would love them. People ask me, you know, sometimes, Jim, will the twins be a chef? They're only three. As long as they enjoy food and we enjoy eating together, that's the magic of good eating and good family. And, you know, twins make home, really, for me, to cook for them, that they enjoy food. I think that's very special. But definitely when they get older, I'll get them into cooking. I certainly will. And Imelda has started getting them into cooking. That's my wife. So, yeah, it's a great time in my life. It's fantastic.
Okay. So, like, I mean, let's, I suppose, turn it back to yourself as a teenager. You know, you say, like, the food was a family business. But, like, you know, there's many family businesses where someone is kind of starts out in it, and they may not be particularly suited to it. At what point did you realise that, like, I mean, food was your calling?
Probably from 8 and 9, I used to bake with my mother. And to be honest with you, I worked with my mother for nearly 20 years of my life. She passed away 2 years ago with cancer. And I had a great relationship. We never fell out. She was the hardest working woman, reared a family of nine. So I was very focused. I knew exactly. I didn't do my leaving cert. I left school early after my junior cert. First boy in my school to do home economics. And I had a very clear vision of what I wanted. My dad used to slag me off and different food critics, John McKenna. I used to go to bed with cookery books. Now I go to bed with my wife and twins. But, you know, so it is, I suppose, something I've never... Cooking has been very good to me and food has been very good to me. And I love cooking as much as I've always done, even more so. I love the variety, I suppose, I have in my life. From being here at Bloom doing demos, last night I went home and cooked on service, and I have a great variety. Would I give up the restaurant to do more television work? No way. I love it. I love meeting my customers, and I love being in my kitchen. But it's all about having a good team, too. And that's what I've learned over the years. Cooking is one element of running a restaurant and a business, having good staff. My head chef is with me 12 years. We have over 55 people employed in Black Lion. So you're only as good as the team you have, and you have to let them develop. You have to let them come up with their own ideas and work together as a team. I think that's really, really important. So once you respect them, my staff are like my family. That's the way I treat them, and we have them a long time, thank God.
Yeah, okay. You mentioned their back line, and you've currently a lot of staff employed there. What was it like back in the 80s? Particularly, what was on the menu back in the 80s as well? Like, you know, I'm very curious about that element of things.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, when I started cooking with my mother, we closed the restaurant from 1973 to 1989, we reopened the restaurant, and we had, I think, maybe 4 or 5 bedrooms. Now we have 19. Mum had a huge a la carte menu where she would make a lot of sauces to order and different things like that. Steak Diane, mixed grill, trout a la almonds with some almonds and some butter. Now, when I started really getting into cooking, when I was 21, I used to have alligator, buffalo, I used to have ostrich, these exotic meats. And I suppose I changed my menu every week. And you really can't cook consistently. So I was full of energy. Not that I am now, but I learned to cook seasonally. And that's something you develop as you get older, I suppose, and a little bit mature. When I went away to work in different restaurants, food has changed and evolved so much, not alone in my restaurant, but in Ireland. Accessibility to get great ingredients. Like a show like this showcases some of the best food we have anywhere in the world, anywhere. Our meat, our dairy. We're so lucky. We're a small country, but we're punching way above our weight, I think. So I really do. So to go back, I suppose food has changed so much. My cuisine has changed. And my style of cooking is taking one element, whether it's a piece of beef or lamb, and we do it three different ways. So we showcase it to our customers that this is what you can do with these different cuts and techniques. You're there for a food experience. People book us maybe 6 months ahead, so we just can't offer them just a plain steak. If they want a plain steak, of course they can get it. But I want to showcase, I don't want to show off, I want to showcase the wonderful produce that we have.
Yeah, it's interesting, you talked there about, like, I mean, going off on your grand tour, you know, that's when you kind of, I suppose, left Black Line and I was going to say played, but like cooked all around Europe. Then you're talking there about kind of seasonality and learning about that. Alice Waters, when she was speaking at Ballymaloe Literary Festival last week, she was talking big style about the seasonality. Do you think, you know, I mean, you learned about stuff like that only when you left Black Line?
No, I think it's definitely got more in focus in Black Lion, and I suppose with a lot of supermarkets now, we can get food from all over the world any day of the week. And it's about going back and reconnecting with food, where our food comes from, what we put into our food. And I suppose I've learned an awful lot from cooking with my twins. But going back to the restaurant anyway, is seasonality, because when you cook with seasonal food, you get the best flavor, you get the best value, so everyone's winning. The farmer, the consumer, and whoever, you know, the customer. So that's really, really important. Now, when I did go traveling, my first work was in Paul Rankin's in Roscoff. That was the hardest kitchen, one Michelin star. My job there, everyone, was to scrub the cookers, saw the bones, and empty the bins. I didn't cook. I was there for 3 months. When I asked him for a reference, he said, "No, you're not going to make it as a chef." He said, "You're burnt out." Yeah, but that's fine because you're still focused and that motivates you and it drives you even more.
What,
you know,
what age were you at that stage?
I would have been about maybe 18.
So he thought you were burnt out at 18?
Yeah, I know that. Yeah. God, when you think of that, that was very young, wasn't I? Burnt out at 18, yeah. But anyway, I admire Paul and I met him recently and I'm a big fan of his and he's done a lot of good for Irish food. But that's a prime example, everyone, of someone who has maybe 400 or 500 people working for them. And if you don't look after your business and keep your eye on the ball and maybe expand too much, the whole thing can collapse. His wife was really an amazing worker in the kitchen. And it was a great experience for me. And then I went to work in Germany. And the very first day I went in Germany, there was 125 chefs in the kitchen. 7 different restaurants. They opened up the fridge door, Irish beef, Irish lamb. Board be a quality assured, of course. But isn't that an amazing story? And they love that there's a real empathy and a real warmth for Irish people. We're very lucky. We're hard workers. We're honest people. We're good people, good humour, and they love our sense of humour. And probably the hardest kitchen I ever worked in, sorry, I hope I'm not going on too much, was in the 3 Michelin star in San Sebastian, Arzac. 27 chefs in the kitchen. I worked there for 3 months. Didn't get paid. Had to pay for my own accommodation. I went there for experience. Chefs worked there for a year and only 9 of them out of the 27 get paid. Amazing. So that's what you call to get a stage and that. And so every kitchen and every restaurant I went to, I got loads of ideas. And another chef very quickly was a chef called Leah Leinster, the only woman to win the best cook in the world. Leah Leinster is in Luxembourg, her restaurant, and that's the name of her chef. So she won the Booker's Door and she was a demon in the kitchen. Oh my God. She would make Gordon Ramsay look like a pussycat. And when she'd give you a bollocking, you certainly didn't do it again. But she'd come up and she'd say, "Listen, I only want to make you a great chef." She'd come over and stayed in Black Lion, and one thing she commented on, the quality of her milk or cream and her butter. She couldn't get over the milk. She couldn't get over the butter. She uses all Irish beef and lamb. So there are different kitchens that have made me realise about a little bit about foraging, a little bit about seasonality, an awful lot about seasonality, and about using local and building up a relationship with your butcher, your farmer, your vegetable grower, whoever it is. Food is all about trust and traceability, I think so.
Yeah. I mean, they're all really like interesting things you learn about food and you learn about the cooking and techniques. What did you learn about yourself from all those restaurants?
Wow, what did I learn about myself? That's a really interesting question.
When people say it's always an interesting question, you know two things are happening. Either one, it's not an interesting question, or two, they need pausing for time.
No. Because I haven't been asked it before, really, to be honest with you. What did I learn about myself? I learned so much about, first of all, I missed home, for sure. And when you can't speak a language, okay, the Germans are very good. They can speak English, of course. And in the Leo Leinster's restaurant, they spoke French. But they were very, very good to me. I'm a very hard-working person. And, for example, when I went to Roscoe's, I'll just tell you this, like most students would have finished at, so from 9:30 to 4:30. I was there to learn. I'm like a sponge. So I'd go on until 11 o'clock whenever the chef's finished. So, so chefs can see that I'm very dedicated. I'm a team player. If someone wants a hand, or you want me to help you, whatever it is, I'll stay and help you until it's done. I'm not going to finish and go on my break. I'm part of the team. And I suppose I learned an awful lot about myself that cooking was for me, and also how you can open your whole creativity and how exciting food is. Like, you give the same chef 5 different ingredients and they'll all cook a different dish. If we all cook the same, it's boring, isn't it? Do you know? So that's what I think cooking is all about. I'm always learning about myself, and I'm constantly questioning myself because I want to better myself. I never want to become stale as a chef. 2 years ago, I went to work for 2 weeks in a 2-Michelin star in Amsterdam. Next year, I'm not sure if it's going to happen this summer, but next year I'm definitely going to go to a restaurant called Texture in London. He uses no cream, no butter, God love me. But and he's a fabulous chef called Aggie Searson, and I really admire him. And he said, Nevin, you can come to my kitchen anytime. So I don't want to go on copy. I want to get inspiration and ideas, and that's really important for me. So that's how I would question myself. But also, customers will question me as a chef. You know, if I put on a new dish, feedback is so important, and I'll know within a night or two if it's a success or not, and they will tell me very honestly, and I'll ask them, which is very important.
Yeah. Okay, so when you come back then from your grand tour back to Black Line, and you put things like alligator and buffalo on the menu, you know, I mean, also in terms of your attitude in the kitchen as well, I mean, were you fired up? Like, you know, were you coming back to prove something, or were you coming back basically to kind of take over a family business?
Kind of a bit of both, actually. That's really an interesting thing to say, because I suppose you wanted to get recognition, because in Black Lion, everyone, I remember cooking for 6 or 8 people. We were on our knees. We looked to move many times. And then I got a break on television called The Afternoon Show. It was open house with Marty Whelan and Mary Kennedy. I was on that show for about 6 years every Tuesday. So that really helped me, but helped me also as a chef, but helped me also for the business, for sure. So I'll never, ever forget the bad times to appreciate the good times, because we've had a lot of struggles, you know. And even during the recession, we'd have probably bucked the trend. We'd have been one of the most busiest restaurants in the country, booked up. That's a hard thing to manage and control. When we opened the restaurant diary, we get awful negative feedback. I have 6 people on the phones, 12 hours a day for 2 weeks, and we get 30 lines coming into the restaurant. You wouldn't believe that the amount of people that want to come, which is fantastic, don't get me wrong, but we get cancellations every day, and it's getting that message across. Like, so many people say to me at the show here, oh, I hear there's a waiting list of 2 years. No, there's not. There's a waiting list of 6 months or something like that, because that's all we take the bookings for. So we're the victim of our own success, but it's an amazing success in Black Lion, in a village that has struggled so much through the recession, and I'm proud of that. I'm proud of the team that has made that Black Lion. Like, I'm here today, I don't have a worry. I have a great team that will just manage, and I'm sure some of my customers will be disappointed. But, you know, I went back last night, back Friday, so I'm very still committed to Black Lion. I'm there 90% of the time, which is, people think he's never there. And I want to be there. I don't want to give up I've given my life to my job, you know. And myself and my wife is involved. Who do I ever want to be married to a chef, I can tell you. But it's great, because she manages the books and, I suppose, the wages and that. And she's the core. She will be so honest with me. And she's, you know, if there's anything like I'm looking to do or approach, she'd say yes or no. And you need that. You need someone to bounce off stuff to.
I mean, like, I remember the first coming across you in the late 1990s. Some friends of mine from Cavan were talking about this amazing pastry chef over in Black Lion. And when, like, we eventually got to eat there, the food was sensational. But, like, it was, as you kind of said, the Black Lion went through so much sort of, like, trouble and strife, you know, and its location as well. I mean, talk us through, I suppose, like, you know, some of those kind of, like, struggles you've kind of faced since you've come back after the tour, since you took it over.
Yeah, well, you know, We kind of always have reinvested in our restaurant, and I mean, like our house was destroyed twice during the Troubles, the whole front of it. Like, I was only a baby, I can't really remember, you know, or a young child. So we've seen huge changes and huge change in food. It's very interesting you say about desserts, because I'm very much self-taught. I've never worked professionally as a pastry chef, even though I used to teach. A big part of my life when I qualified as a chef, I went back in teaching. And I learned a lot about myself, probably too, but also about students and young chefs and how to talk to them, how to respect them. In kitchens, certainly not in my kitchen, but in some kitchens, there's a lot of roaring and shouting and a lot of high pressure. a lot of kitchens don't work like that, guys. You can't get the best out of your staff and out of your team. And if you give a bollocking to someone, you've lost them for the night. I've been in kitchens where people are made feel that small, and I said, no, it's not the way I'm brought up anyway. I'm not that kind of a person. I'm respectful. And if someone makes a mistake, it's okay. We're only cooking food. Let's try and not make it again. Let's try and learn from it. I make mistakes every day. So I suppose there's been huge developments in Black Lion. We've added on 9 more rooms. We have 19 bedrooms. Opened up a cookery school last year. What I love to do, I'm a cute cava man. I love to do things in stages. So, you know, I mean, like I've had offers to come to Dublin and over to London and to Paris. But no, I want to do it right. I want to enjoy my life now. I think that's the key. Knowing when you have enough and when you can enjoy it and you're in control of it. Isn't that the word? Yeah. To be in control of it. We'd all love more time at home with the twins or whatever, or with our family. And I think I'm pretty much getting that there now, which is great. I'm pretty much proud of that. So, yeah. I hope.
Okay, I suppose I want to talk a little bit about your team, you know, and it's something we're talking about this earlier on. It's something you kind of said in a Tom Dooley interview many years ago, that you still take your team of chefs with you to kind of on tour, the whole kind of like a 1-star hotel, 5-star restaurant experience. But like, you know, that whole, like, I mean, what do you learn from, like, I mean, again, what do you kind of get from that, aside from hanging with your chefs and that? Like, what do you bring back with you to Black Lion?
What we get from it, I'll tell you what we get from it. First of all, we pool our tips, everyone. So we collect our tips, and then what we do is we go away for maybe 2 days. We've been to Barcelona, to Edinburgh, to London, to Paris. And we go, and as you say, we stay in a travel lodge, but we eat in some of the best restaurants, we really do. And it's interesting when you go in as a group of young chefs, and they'll pretty much spot if you're a chef very quickly. Some of them will totally dismiss you and be kind of stuffy and up rude, and you just say, well, you're not going to get our money again. It's as simple as that. And some places you'll go to and they'll really look after you. He'll bring you into the kitchen. Michel Roux and Le Gravache, one of the best experiences I've had in a kitchen. He brought us in, gave us an extra course. He found out we were chefs. We came over from Ireland. Oh, it was a funny story. We were going in for lunch, and there was 8 of us. Yeah, 8 of us were going in for lunch. And it's the one restaurant, actually there's 2 restaurants, another one in Paris, that if you don't have a jacket on you, they bring you, march you up to a room and they put on a green jacket on you. Now that's a bit formal, but that's what they do and you have to respect that. So I hadn't seen that before, so we got kind of caught out, but he was very, very kind to us. Another restaurateur, of course, you know, Gordon Ramsay. Good example, good story. We ate in his 3-star in Royal Hospital Road the night before. We had a beautiful meal. And Jean-Claude is Gordon Ramsay's longest member of staff. I know him for 20 years. He's a gentleman. And he came over and stayed in my restaurant last year. So we went there for dinner the night before. And the next day we went to Petrus. So the restaurant manager said, listen, I know you're chefs. And he says, come on into the kitchen. Gordon's in there. So we all went in. We were all excited. Marcus Waring was the chef. And Gordon totally snubbed us. We stood there, and I said, come on, you couldn't even spend 2 minutes with the guys and say hello. Quick photograph. We spent a lot of money, but they were heartbroken. I just kind of knew, well, that's Gordon. He's like the weather. He's a bit changeable. But, you know, and, you know, you just see the real side of people like that. I would never, ever, ever, if I saw a young person, a young chef or a customer, I'd always spend a minute or two or whatever I can and welcome them and thank them at least. So, you know, so when we do go away for a few days, we go to markets, which is really important. You know, especially in the Ramblas in Barcelona, the fish market, the meat market, you know, Billingsgate, Smithfield. You're learning all the time. You're learning as a team. You're learning about one another, I suppose, which is interesting out of work. But also, we don't always have to go away and leave Ireland. We have great restaurants in Ireland. The Greenhouse, Chapter 1, Le Cravan. So there's great chefs that you can go to, pop up, stay the night in Dublin on a Monday or Tuesday, and we're back into work Wednesday. And that's great fun. And the guys can go out to Temple Bar, wherever they go, and get absolutely crazy. But they enjoy themselves, but also they enjoy good food.
Yeah.
And we learn. You learn about different chefs' techniques and different things like that. And I think it's a real bonding experience, so it is.
Okay, you mentioned a couple of restaurants there in Dublin, Nevin. I mean, who do you regard, who do you like, who's both heralded and unheralded in terms of chefs in Ireland at the moment?
Wow. To be honest with you, I think there's never, ever, ever been a more exciting time to go out and eat in Ireland. There's huge competition. Huge. A couple of chefs I really admire in Chapter 1, Ross Lewis, Derry Clark. They're two chefs who have been very good to me since when I started. I could pick up the phone and ring Ross Lewis, and Ross, I would ask him a question and he'd help me. And that's really good. I never forget people like that, because there can be a lot of jealousy in this industry, and people are jealous of your success. And some people admire it. Not everyone does. But listen, I am what I am, and I think I'm a pretty genuine, open, honest guy. And, you know, there's so many good chefs, like Mike in the Greenhouse.
Yeah.
Patrick Giba's won Best Restaurant in Ireland this year through your own awards, through the Irish Times. And it's one of the best. It's fantastic. I love it. You know, so there's so many good places, and it's not always about fine dining either. It's about having a lovely experience. Like, I'll bring the twins. One of my favorite places is in the Clarence Hotel, Cleavery East, and I've been there 4 or 5 times. We bring the twins, and they have a little piece of steak or fish or something like that. So it's all about eating together and enjoying food. There's great value in Ireland, and that's something that really, I think, helped the recession. Yeah. Is that a lot of the weaker restaurants that were really ripping people off, maybe I shouldn't say that, but they're weeded, they're gone now. Yeah. And that won't come back to that again, because people work too hard to go out and you know, they want a nice experience. And we'll never take our customers for granted either in Black Lion, because, as I say, we never forget the bad days to appreciate the good days. People book, like last night, I had 8 people drove the whole way from Killarney for a chef's table, a 70th birthday and a 40th anniversary. So I made time, I spoke to every customer. I could have went home early, I could have been home at 10:30, but I stayed there until 12 o'clock just to make sure. So I think that personal touch is very important.
Yeah.
And that means an awful lot to me running a business. And people love to see you. You know, some chefs don't like they like to stay in their kitchen, and that's fine too. But I love people, I have to say. I really do.
You said earlier on that when you were starting out, you went to bed with a lot of cookbooks, you know? And like, I mean, now there's an awful lot of people who go to bed with Nevin. I mean, your cookbook industry, your cookbook, aside from Melody.
Don't tell my wife that. Jesus. Are we recording that? That's not true.
But it's like, I mean, the thing is, like, if you stayed in just in Black Lion, I mean, people would have heard about you word of mouth. The fact is, you started off in Live at 3, you've got the cookbook industry going. That's been really, really good in terms of kind of, like, I suppose, setting up Nevin Maguire, the brand, you know? Like, are you kind of, when you look at that industry that's been created, because you're putting out a cookbook a year or every 18 months, right? You've got the TV series is ongoing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of work. I mean, does this have a big knock-on effect back on the restaurant as well?
Huge. Huge. And I've just finished my 12th cookbook. Like, when I started cooking, 12. Guys, yeah, I never, ever, ever, hand on my heart, looked to be on television or do a cookbook. And it's all about taking the opportunity when it's there, enjoying it, never taking it for granted. I'm the same in my kitchen as I am here now, or even on television. I'm relaxed. I love it. I never take it for granted. I've nearly finished 100 programs for RTE, which have been sold in the UK. And imagine, I was watching myself in New Zealand when I was there with my mother and my wife on New Zealand food TV. So it's great to profile. For me, it's great about showcasing the great food in Ireland, the great produce, but the great chefs too, which is fantastic. So I suppose, it's amazing. When I look back to when I started cooking, 12 cookbooks, it's great. And, you know, cookbooks, it's all about having a good team, everyone. You can do a cookbook genuinely in about maybe 3 months from start to finish. And that's photography, recipe testing. Every recipe has to be tested. So I have a team of chefs. Olivia, who's here with me at Bloom, herself and Claire, and I have 4 chefs who test all the recipes. I have a lady, Orla Broderick. I don't know if you ever came across her. She's worked on 11 of my cookbooks. So I have a good team that know what I want, and Gilla McMillan are a dream to work with. They are just the nicest people, because they listen to you, they work with you, and they produce beautiful books. My last, or the book that was out last year, the Fast book, you always look for something that people want, something fast. Now it's healthy now. I've just launched my baby and toddler book 2 weeks ago, and it's number one in Ireland, which is incredible. Mm. And that's down to maybe, I suppose, the profile from newspapers, but also I was on The Late Late Show, which is great. And so you never, I suppose, take that for granted. It's great PR. And it does have a huge impact in your business. It does. People, like, if I'm not there and on the Late Late Show, sod him, and he's not here tonight. You know, even a few people said to me last night, oh, I thought you weren't going to be here now at Bloom. It's amazing how many people actually were at Bloom Thursday and Friday and came for dinner last night, and they were kind of surprised to see me. So that's really important. And I suppose that's another reason why I love to do that, because people think, God, he's never here. But I am. But it's about having a good team, as I keep saying. Yeah.
Okay. Your latest book, as you say, is a baby and toddlers one. I mean, are you suddenly kind of seeing a series coming? I mean, are you going to be producing books for kind of like, you know, cookbooks of teenagers, cookbooks to give someone their 20-something to get them out the door?
If you were to ask me 5 years ago if I would produce a baby and toddler book, I'd laugh and you'd say, well, I don't even have a family. But now I have twins. So unless you can put it into kind of practice in a way, and recipes that I've cooked at home, probably the hardest book I ever wrote, if I'm being honest with you. It took about a year to write. All the recipes were vetted. So I got dietitians involved from the first 1,000 days, and also the INTI were very, very kind to me and helped me with the recipe development and the tasting. So to be truthful with you, you're always looking for something new and different and fresh. The publishers, Nikki Howard is my commissioner, she's the editor, and she's wonderful. So we all throw our ideas into the pot. Like 2 years ago, I was going to do a book on Nevin's sweet tooth. And then I was away on holidays, myself, Imelda, and the twins. And I got an awful lot of bad press sugar. And I said, Nikki, I don't think this is going to work. I really, my gut feeling is this is not the time to do this. Sugar is the demon, you know, says me with the sugar in my coffee. Anyway, but yeah, so you have to listen to what people want. And I was paid a nice compliment the other day that I do listen to people. I meet so many people, even at shows at Bloom in my restaurant. So I'm meeting people every day. So it's to listen to what they want, because they're your audience, they're your customers. Never forget that.
Last couple of questions, Nevin. Thanks so much for taking the time, because I realize you're really, really busy, so it's good to have you over here. I suppose when you look at the original menu that was in McNean's back in the day when you were kind of starting out, how much of that would still stack up today? I mean, how much of that would you still put in the menu today, the stuff, the foods that was on the menu back in the late 80s?
Jim, to be honest with you, it's changed so much. It really has. There would be very few things, like my mother, when she was cooking, had a dessert trolley. You were talking the desserts about me being renowned for desserts. I suppose my first prize I ever won was the Egan Rone Dessert of the Year. And that was a huge thing. It was one of the biggest guides in Ireland. And now there's so many awards and so many guides for restaurants and chefs and whatever like that, which is great. It's all positive, by the way. So I suppose my cooking has changed a lot, because restaurants I've worked in and people's taste buds have changed. Let's not forget about the customers. All of us here have travelled. We've tasted lots of different flavours and tastes. So we have quite a sophisticated palate in Ireland. People aren't going to drive up 4 hours or wherever from Dublin, wherever they're coming from, to Black Lion to get just a very simple meal. They want a wow feeling. They want a great feeling from service, that they've had a good meal, they've had good value. I don't think we're expensive. We're not cheap, but I really think there's great value in Ireland in general. And I think you never can forget that. You know, your customers will dictate. So it's about listening to them. And as I said to you earlier on, and when I put a new dish on the menu, that we listen. Like, I'll give you an example. I used to have this dish on, which turbot. I used to braise beef cheek, put in some truffle and wild mushrooms. And I had it on. I loved it. Oh, my God, I loved it. We made fresh pasta, a little wild mushroom ravioli with that. And it was so tasty, and a red wine sauce. And a lot of ladies didn't like it because it overpowered the turbot. So now I let the fish speak for itself, and I'll have a side garnish, you know, something like that. So it's always kind of questioning yourself, as you've asked me earlier on, Jim, which is a great thing you've said to me. And I constantly question yourself about what goes on the menu. You know, when I change a menu, everyone, I'm a bit sad. I probably can't sleep the night before because I'm so excited. You know, I get really excited. My wife goes mad because I'm thinking about it all the time. Last week we were away in Portugal for my wife's birthday and the twins, and I have about maybe 8 new dishes to go on the menu in the next 2 weeks. But I'll ask the chefs, and Glenn in particular, and Carmel, my Swiss chefs, you know, we'll do one up and we'll taste it, and then we'll put it on. So I get really excited about changing the menu. I'm still a bit sad like that, but that's what I am.
Okay. you said there about, like, Nevin, about the changing taste buds of kind of like customers when they come in as well, and how that's kind of how that has a knock-on effect on what you cook there. What about, like, I mean, changing demands from customers? Have you noticed in the last couple of years that customers are a lot more demanding, that they're a lot more kind of like, I mean, you know, is there a backlash, say, with social media as well? Is it sometimes like the fact that people are very, very quick to criticize?
Do you know what? Absolutely, I would agree. And it's, I suppose, with social media, it's instant. Everyone is a food critic. And I mean, like, people look at ask me, you know, what do I think of food critics? I think they're very important. But for me, my customers are my biggest critics. They will dictate what's right about my business, what's not right. Feedback is so important. You know, good feedback and negative feedback. We can't please everyone. And if I had two ladies in the restaurant last night, and they said to me they didn't enjoy the lamb, and I was gutted. They said it was quite tasteless. And I said, what? And I went in and I got the chef to cook me one. And I said, God, I don't find anything wrong with that. But I took it off the menu because I don't want people leaving. I don't want to come up to Black Lion and say, you didn't like this, and expecting it to get it. But it's about listening to your customers. And I suppose, for me, I didn't agree with them, but I would never say that, well, you're wrong, because it's, everyone has an opinion about food, and they're quite knowledgeable about food. And for me, I want to create a lovely experience for people, that they're not overwhelmed, that they feel comfortable with what they're eating, that there's a good choice on the menu. We have a complete vegetarian menu, we have a dinner menu and a tasting menu. So we change that not every single week, but we do change dishes maybe every 2 to 3 weeks. And it depends. Like, a great thing now is with a lot of suppliers, particularly fish, they'll send you a text and you'll get, this is what's available, this is the price, how much do you want? It's great service, 3 or 4 times a week. So we can change our menu every day when it comes to fish or something like that. Whereas with beef, we're consistent. Country Cress, everyone, just behind us here. My uncle is supplying them with the beef. they're feeding the beef. Troy's in Mullingar are killing the beef, and I'm using the beef. So I can tell you, my uncle can tell you the exact animals, which is amazing traceability. And I'm proud of that. And that's something, like, because we have about two suppliers for everything. But to be honest with you, they are fantastic. And beef is our number one seller in the restaurant. We love beef because we have great beef in Ireland. The grass-fed, haven't we? We really do.
Yeah, absolutely. Ned McGuire, thank you very much for your time. Wow. Ned McGuire, everybody.
Thanks, guys. That was brilliant. Ray, thank you. Gentlemen, thank pleasure. You pleasure.
Thanks a million to Nevin for joining us at Banter, and big thanks to Rosa Shocknessy and all our team at Borbia for their sterling work in making Banter happen at Bloom. This podcast was produced by Banter podcast series producer Tanya White. If you've enjoyed this event, please rate us and spread the word. Tell your friends about us, recommend us on your favourite social media network, leave a review or a rating on the iTunes store, and don't forget to subscribe. You can check out thisisbanter.com for news of what we're up to at Banter, and bloominthepark.com for all news about Bloom. We'll be back next week with another podcast. Until then, goodbye and take care.